Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Progressive News Network Extra. My name is Brooke Hines. Welcome. So glad you've joined me tonight to discuss last night's Democratic presidential debate. It was quite a day on Twitter and the interwebs, keeping up with all of the shade being thrown back and forth in the celebration and the conspiracy theories and all of the fallout from the debates. Let's get into it. Overall, CNN and the New York Times, it has to be said, were sponsoring this debate, and they spent 3 hours with 12 Democratic presidential candidates on that stage, and not once did they bring up a question on climate change or immigration. So they were, however, very interested in, and the Vanderbilt, I guess, on the moderators panel were very interested in the wealth tax. And I wonder why that is. They were so interested in the wealth tax that it seemed to me that they tried to start a fight between Steyer and Bernie Sanders, calling out Steyer as, well, you're the only billionaire on the stage and you're standing close to Bernie Sanders. What do you have to say about this? And I love that Steyer came back and said pretty much that he agrees with everything that Bernie Sanders says, and that he supported a wealth tax and so on and so forth. It was a really good moment for Steyer. I don't actually know why he's running or why he was on that stage, but his contribution last night was it was appreciated by me. I thought that exchange was worth the price he's paid to get on that stage. It was interesting. It was also difficult, but it was interesting as you were watching this to see how much time was being given to Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg. It was way too much time. And you could tell, I could tell, it had the feel to me that what CNN was trying to do was to boost the signal of these two very conservative, probably the most conservative Democrats up on the stage at this point. And Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg were having a particularly difficult night, I felt like. Buttigieg tried to, and you know everything that Buttigieg does is, this is, his donors are talking. He's just a mouthpiece for check writers. It's just blah, blah, blah. This is what my money people say. And it was just cringe after cringe with him trying to do these like sick burns on, the other candidates. And it wasn't landing. It just wasn't landing. And he just sounded like a frustrated weasel or something. Because my husband does, I've often called Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, the nervous stoat, which I think is actually too cute for him. I mean, he does have that kind of, ferrety, stoat-y kind of look about him, but kind of more to the weasel side. He was more to the weasel side last night. Amy Klobuchar is like that aunt that you have to see at Thanksgiving who drinks too much and thinks she's funny, but she's really just mean and sad and, goes home to her cats or whatever. So she didn't have a good night, and CNN just gave them so much rope. You know, the CNN really wanted the conservatives to have their moments, and boy, they got them. I've got some clips for you that I'll play, but we got some more just on the overall. Russia was mentioned 27 times. And I got to say, you know, I'm not going to get into it on this particular broadcast, but some of the stuff that people were saying with regard to Russia, debunked claims, overblown claims, just bizarre, just all of it, just crazy. We've dealt with that before. We'll deal with it again. But Russia was mentioned 27 times, and impeachment was the very first thing that was brought up during the debate. So that kind of set the tone and you know, put everybody on a certain footing, where I believe, because that was the first question and we are, you know, a few debates into the season, I feel like there was something interesting that happened with the Democratic candidates kind of cleaved. You know, there's the top tier, and Kamala isn't in it. There's the top tier, and that's Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. And the rest of the crew is mostly trying to get digs in at them, or contrast with them. So, you know, like, hey, look at me. I mean, it's kind of their job or whatever. But something that happened over and over last night that was completely annoying and I never want to see again on a debate stage during a primary is, you know, people trying to grandstand. And Buttigieg did this actually after attacking people, but trying to grandstand and say, well, this is not the moment to attack, fellow Democrats or blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you know, first of all, you were just attacking Democrats just a second ago. And secondly, this is a primary, and that's exactly what you're supposed to be doing during a primary. So, just for me personally, the award for most annoying on that goes to Cory Booker. I mean, it just seemed like he didn't have a reason to be there, and he kept trying to be like the one who was saying, guys, don't fight. Why do you want to fight? I'm a lover, not a fighter. And he's just freaking annoying, and his ears are too pink. But moving on, Amy Klobuchar, she had that terrible joke where she tried to say that she was trying to say that what the Russians did wasn't meddling. That meddling is when I call my daughter on a Saturday night or something like that. And she knew that joke was falling flat as she was saying it. And it was this big, huge self-own. And it was so well-deserved. I mean, I don't know what it is about Amy Klobuchar, but I completely enjoy when she falls on her face. It makes me so happy. It's just like she kind of has it coming to her. And, you know, I really kind of resent, I actually very much resent CNN pushing Buttigieg and Klobuchar at us. You know, it reminds me of, again, when you're at Thanksgiving and there's that damn green jello salad mold thing and it gets pushed around the table and nobody ever wants it. There's only one person who wants it, and she's the one who makes it, and she's the one who brings it, and she pushes it on everybody. Everybody's like, no, get that away from me. And that's how I feel about Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg. And, you know, he just keeps getting worse and worse. And the more he gets worse, the more his fans, are they buttheads? I mean, would they be buttheads, Mayor Pete fans? Would they be Buttigieg's? The more that they dig in, you know, the more it is consistent and equal to him getting worse. And so, you know, there's no mystery to this. It's tied to the money. It's tied to how well funded he is, what consultants he's working with, and so on and so forth. And, you know, we talked about consultants messing around with campaigns yesterday in the pre-debate show because of Elizabeth Warren's surrogate, Ashley Preston, who still, you know, still hasn't quit the campaign or been asked to stand down from the campaign. We said yesterday that, or I said, you know, just me, myself. I said that, you know, Warren's campaign seems like it's taken on all of the worst aspects of the Hillary Clinton campaign. And we know that it's taken on most of the consultants, you know, and the staffers from the campaign. And you see her do things, I think, or you see the campaign doing things that when you see Elizabeth Warren on stage, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. The way that Ashley Preston comports herself on social media and in broadcast media has no relationship to the personality or the persona that is Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren is so much more likable just on her own. She doesn't need a surrogate like that, you know, to be out there, you know, dirtying up the water for her. But there was something kind of interesting Ashley Preston related today. So, you know, there was at the end of the debate, there was a story that came out. Dave Weigel did the Washington Post about Bernie Sanders is doing his big, you know, welcome back from the hospital event, you know, welcome back to the campaign event. And it's going to be in New York this weekend. And he's been saying that there's going to be a special guest. And, you know, they've been kind of, you know, tweaking that and teasing that. And we found out last night that the special guest is going to be AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And lo and behold, she's endorsed Bernie Sanders, and so has Ilhan Omar, and I don't know why I have such a hard time saying her name. Ilhan Omar has also endorsed Bernie Sanders. So somebody dug up, someone in one of my DM groups dug up this Ashley Preston tweet from June 23 of this year, and she says, secretly, I check my Twitter feed several times a day to see if AOC finally gave her endorsement to Elizabeth Warren, like, you know, and there's like a gif of a reaction, like reaction gif. So wah, wah, wah. And other fun donut tier saltiness here. We have Horse Whisperer says that this does more to hurt the squad than help Bernie, IMOH. No, IMHO. I'm dyslexic just even talking. Horse Whisperer later today solicited people to send him cute animal pictures because he was so tired of politics. So, you know, there was a lot of this sour grapes. There was a lot of this like, who needs a squad support? You know, that's just preaching to the choir. And of course, CNN last night, you know, as it was being announced, and I can't remember the reporter's name. He says, we have Amy Klobuchar coming up, and I just want to say that I think that this endorsement might seem too urban for American voters. And of course, this is, you know, anybody who's listening to this, I'm sure, is aware of during 2016 and also in the run up to 2020 before Bernie announced and so on. Yeah, the media narrative has always been that people of color do not like Bernie, and Bernie does not like people of color, and he's got a people of color problem, and people of color this, and people of color that, and blah, 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 blah. And so AOC endorses him. Ilhan Omar endorses him. And it broke people's brains. They did not know how to deal with this. It was a beautiful ratio today. Let's see if I can find it here. No, it's the Biden stuff. So this is Jane Eisner, who's a director of academic affairs at Columbia Journalism School, proud alum of Philly Inquirer and Constitution Center. And she says, I find it fascinating that women of color overlook women. I find it fascinating that women of color overlook female and minority candidates to endorse a white guy. Is identity politics over? Is ideology more important than race and gender? Genuinely curious. And she tags Bernie Sanders, AOC, and Ilhan. And, you know, I just want to point out, I mean, this should be obvious to anybody, but the reason, the whole reason, way back, go back to grad school, go back before that, go back to your feminism classes and when you were a sophomore, the whole reason to bring different voices up, to bring women up and to, break the glass ceiling and this, that, and the other, is to bring the ideology with you. It's not, to make sure there's more, women cops killing people at the same time that there's male cops killing people, which is a, more women prison guards, kind of thing. The whole point of it is the whole point of the identity thing back in the beginning was to bring the ideology with it. So if you're just bringing the identity and you're not bringing the ideology, then what are you even doing? And of course, Eisner was roundly ratioed. It was a beautiful thing to behold. I think it's something like 4,000 comments to 300 likes at this point. It's quite ugly. Here's another bitterness tweet. It's a pity endorsement. This is Seize the Clay, a clay artist, apparently. Generally, I love potters and I love pottery and I've been a potter I'm a little disappointed in the potter community for this. It's a pity endorsement. It isn't going to sway anyone. It isn't going to sway anyone who wasn't already voting for Bernie. He will either drop out before Iowa or will tank shortly after so that he becomes irrelevant. maybe pottery shouldn't be their thing. Maybe it should be like novels or something, some kind of fiction writing. Deborah Messing. February 7, and I think that might have been February 7 of this year, all caps, AOC, tagged at AOC, U.R. my period hero period, and it's all caps and everything, and Tia is with Bernie, or maybe it's Thea is with Bernie, quote tweeted this and said, somewhere Deborah Messing is choking on a mimosa, hashtag Bernie squad. That was good. Anyway, so there was just a lot of that today. Let's land on this one right here. Let's see, Jeff Feck. Here he is, Jeff Feck. Rose Twitter will, and this is from 2018, from a little over a year ago. Rose Twitter, which is of course the Democratic Socialist, will never take over the Democratic Party if they refuse to reach out to people of color. Non-white voters are the base, you cosplay socialists. Bend the knee. And he's got a map by Matt Isbell. That he's added to that. And somebody further down said, here's an endorsement by a by some very prominent women of color. And of course, all of the conservatives on Twitter are just, you know, like, oh, it doesn't, it's nothing, it doesn't matter. It's like, yeah, who cares? It's like, well, man, we didn't want it anyway. Mm-hmm. Jeff Feck, F-E-C-K-E. There's a few other little nuggets in here. really odd, you know, guy to be talking about how the Democratic Party needs to up their game with people of color, because he's got all of these tweets where he says, I've never used the N-word. I don't use it anymore. No, he says, I've used the N-word. I don't use it anymore, but I have. And you goddamn know that if I have, Donald Trump has. And then somebody went back and looked up where and found where he said, I have never in my life, this is in 2013, I've never in my life, in my entire life, has there been a time when I needed to use the N-word, and never will there be. And so by 2018, apparently he found an occasion to drop an N-bomb and uses that to make a point vis-a-vis Donald Trump. Oh my God, people are just so, so stupid. Moving on. Let's get off of that. There's before we get into the rest of the debate, I want to mention that fundraising numbers are finally finalized, and we know how much money that people have on hand. So we know the cash on hand. So we've got, for the first time, a real snapshot of how healthy the campaigns are in terms of cash coming in and cash going out. And this is important stuff because, you know, this isn't just the money race. This is also a look under the hood to see how campaigns are functioning. You know, are they keeping enough cash on hand? Do they seem like they have a healthy war chest, and so on and so forth? And so the numbers look like this. Joe Biden only has $9 million cash on hand. Bernie Sanders has $33.7 million cash on hand, well over three times. In terms of their burn, the person who's burning through the most money is John Delaney, because, of course, he's not really running. He's just running advertising against Medicare for All. Tom Steyer is also has the second highest burn rate. He's spent everything he's brought in except for $2.6 million. And his signature thing is impeachment. And you go down the line, this is arranged by burn rate. People at the bottom, the people who have the healthiest war chest are Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, but her overall numbers are not that good. Joe Biden. Joe Biden's overall fundraising numbers are just really weird. You know, for somebody who's supposedly so electable, he's only brought in a total of $38 million, rounding up a $38 million total. You know, and compare that to $60 million for Elizabeth Warren and $74 million total for Bernie Sanders. So Joe Biden is way behind on fundraising, and this last quarter is responsible for a lot of that, because he really kind of tanked. He really kind of disappeared. And so today we found out something really interesting about Joe Biden, that while he has very little cash on hand, he in the last quarter, he spent $1 million, a cool million, on private jets. So he's campaigning in style, that Joe Biden is. Biden spent more than he took in this quarter, and that's left him with it looks like it's more like $8 million than $9 million. So there's a little bit of flex there. So fundraising wise, we've got Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Now, you know, this this is going to bring me back to the deconstructing the messaging of the debate last night. And let me just take a break just for a second. And I got to do some, I'm going to do a little bit of technical stuff right here. Just a second. I'll be right back. Enjoy. I'm back. I actually just had to cough. Sometimes that happens, just knowing why I cough in the microphone. But messaging. So overall, this whole messaging situation with last night. You know, we were treated to, that was just a corporate debate. I mean, just through and through, there was all of the issues that that would really affect the bottom line of corporate sponsors of CNN. Those issues were pushed to the side. Fossil fuel, which is also tied up with defense industry spending, you know, all of that was sidelined, essentially. So what you got, what you're left with is a moderation panel that is setting up instances where hopefully the candidates will start going at each other and so they can make it about personalities instead of making it about policies, which is, again, this is what Eisner was talking about. Like, oh, I thought we were going to have an identity election, and all of a sudden it's an ideological election, you know, like as if ideology just doesn't exist, as if that wasn't something that we weren't interested in with regard to, you know, the identity question. And I talked about how we saw CNN pushing Klobuchar and Buttigieg. Warren got by far the most speaking time. And part of that is because she was attacked. Everybody attacked Warren. Now, I know that within the people that I, within my clique, people that I talk to on a regular basis, I know that there's been a lot of folks who are interested in seeing Bernie draw a distinction with Elizabeth Warren. And that is the one thing that actually didn't happen last night. You know, he did the ABC This Week interview, which turned out to be pretty short, and really the only thing that he said that was like super substantive was that Elizabeth Warren is a capitalist through her bones, and that he isn't, and so that's the main contrast, and he left it at that, and there was no Bernie attacks on Elizabeth Warren, but we have everybody else. So check out, here's Pete Buttigieg. Mayor Pete.
We heard it tonight. A yes or no question that didn't get a yes or no answer. Your signature, Senator, is to have a plan for everything except this.
You see how clipped he is? You see how like he's a weasel that's like, you know, he's drawn back and he's like leaping forward, you know, he's just really advancing on this and he's really trying to land on it. And I'm gonna play that again.
We heard it tonight. A yes or no question that didn't get a yes or no answer. Your signature, Senator, is to have a plan for everything except this.
We heard it tonight. You have a plan for everything except this. It's like a little bird chirping or something. So there's Buttigieg going after Warren. Now, here's
sometimes
Beto.
I think that Senator Warren is more focused on being punitive or pitting some part of the country against the other.
Elizabeth Warren is punitive and pitting one part of the country against another. You know, Beto actually, you know, I don't put a lot of stock in the polls and the temperature polls, you know, where they're taking people's temperature during a debate. But Beto came out of this debate the most disliked. People disliked his performance the most out of everybody. And this kind of rhetoric, I think, contributed to that. Let's hear it again.
Sometimes I think that Senator Warren is more focused on being punitive or pitting some part of the country against the other.
There's something about the way he said that too that kind of reminds me of someone who's just ripped a bong, you know, and it's just like, oh, I got this idea, I got this thought, and I got to say it. And it doesn't really, that didn't land. Because she's not punitive. And the look that she gave him was actually pretty spectacular. She was just like, what? Let me say this too, because this was actually the moment that me and my husband both noticed this. Elizabeth Warren is not that much younger than Biden and Bernie Sanders. She has amazing skin. Oh my God, no sun damage. You can't she does not look the age she is. And of course, because they were talking about health issues, which I'm going to get around to on Bernie Sanders and the heart attack and everything. But to look at Elizabeth Warren, she looks like she could be 50-ish, maybe, definitely in her 60s, not 70 or 70-something, not at all. Whatever it is. I got to know her skincare routine. You know, I'm sure a lot of it is just that she stayed inside studying for most of her life and, you know, the sun didn't get to her. And that's very important. But oh my God, she legit is one of those people who just has the genes or whatever it is. Maybe it's the Native American in her, but oh my God, she's got some kind of fountain of youth. Maybe she's drinking baby's blood. I don't know. These are questions. These are questions that should be asked. No, these are questions that shouldn't be asked. We should not ask these questions. Let's hear how Kamala Harris went after Elizabeth Warren.
Senator Warren, I just want to say that I was surprised to hear that you did not agree with me when I called on Twitter to suspend Donald Trump's account, that you did not agree, and I would urge you to join me.
Senator Warren, you did not jump into my Twitter fight when I was trying to make a point about Donald Trump. Doesn't it sound like she's got so Beto sounds like he's just ripped a bong. Like Kamala Harris sounds like she's just, you know, snuffed up a big rail or something. And she's always like messing with her nose too, you know, with that kind of like pumped up, you know. I mean, she's a prosecutor, so that's just the way they are. But she also has this like bravado, you know. Let me hear this again.
Senator Warren, I just want to say that I was surprised to hear that you did not agree with me when I called on Twitter to suspend Donald Trump's account, that you did not agree, and I would urge you to join me.
You did not agree. Well, okay, so Elizabeth Warren did not agree with Kamala Harris's lame Twitter war with Donald Trump because it's stupid. It's absolutely stupid. And she's trying to make it into this big, like, oh, it's us against Silicon Valley and blah, blah, blah. This is plastic straws. This is why Kamala Harris is irrelevant right now, because she keeps, you know, trying to attach herself to these non-issues that are supposed to be emblematic of something. They're supposed to point to something else that's ideological, you know, but they don't actually. There's no substance there, and people see through it. I think the way that campaigns and messaging and all that stuff has been run for many years, for many, 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 many years, has left people with the impression that you can get away with that stuff. And it's been wrong. And Florida is a laboratory for this, because we've been treated to 20 full years of nothing but, you know, Sally, what's her name, said it the best. She was the, I think she was the executive director of the Florida Democratic Party. And I keep wanting to say Sally Jesse Raphael. She would have probably been a better ED. And this person actually also runs a campaign shop right now. You know, she was one of the first people who, you know, was clocked for saying nobody, policy doesn't matter anymore. It's all about personality. And you know, that's a consultant ploy that is utter nonsense. And Kamala Harris trying to score a point with Elizabeth Warren on plastic straws or whether or not Donald Trump is deplatformed on Twitter, nobody really cares. And as long as you're talking about Donald Trump on Twitter, you're belittling everything else that is going on in the world. You're belittling the fact that so many of us can't see a doctor, and we're starting out life. Our kids are starting out life saddled with enough debt that, you know, boomers would consider the debt that people come out of college with the kind of money that would buy a house back then. They'd buy a house and a car and you start family and all that stuff. And that's what we're saddling kids with. And then we turn around and we're like, how come you guys aren't buying more diamonds? Why aren't you buying more diamonds? You seem to like the avocados. The world's messed up. The world is super messed up right now. And the response to Kamala Harris, the way that she's been sinking in the polls and the way that she's just, you know, keeps making herself irrelevant, I think that should be we should take that to heart. We should try to learn something from that. Oh, I saved the best for last. Here we have Amy Klobuchar going after Elizabeth Warren.
At least Bernie's being honest here and saying how he's going to pay for this. I'm sorry, Elizabeth, but you have not said that. You are making Republican talking points right now in this room. The difference between a plan and a pipe dream is something that you can actually get done.
The difference between a plan and a pipe dream is something that you can actually get done. Doesn't she sound like a side villain, like in Harry Potter or something? She's so dislikable, and there's just, I can't believe
it. At least Bernie's being honest here and saying how he's going to pay for this. I'm sorry, Elizabeth, but you have not said that. You are making Republican talking points right now in this room. The difference between a plan and a pipe dream is something that you can actually get done.
I just get this feeling listening to her, it's a physical, it's a muscle memory. It feels to me like someone's getting ready to be hit with a switch. You know, that's the way my mother used to say. That's the way my mother used to sound right before she came after me with one of her like sticks that she cut off a tree to hit me with. Just it's clipped and mean and condescending and just terrible. It's abusive, you know. And we know about how abusive Amy Klobuchar is, you know, with the throwing of the staplers and the whole, you know, eating a salad with a comb and so on and so forth. This is not somebody who needs to be near any more power than she's near. And I think that you can see that in the way that she comports herself vis-a-vis the other candidates on the stage. You know, she's a senator. And in the Senate, there's a certain amount of decorum that is expected. And that decorum is expected outside of the Senate as well. And you're expected to treat your colleagues as friends and colleagues. You know, you're expected to, you know, keep things pretty cool with people, or at least make it sound that way. And we're going to get to Biden here in a second. Even when he's at his worst, he makes these gestures towards Senate decorum that is familiar. Amy Klobuchar doesn't do that at all. I actually don't think that she has it in her. I think that is a deep flaw, and that's a kind of flaw that is you don't want somebody like that near the White House. And we already see what it's like to have somebody with, you know, a severe personality flaw, you know, like dark triad psychopath in the White House. We don't need to replace a male version with a female version of a different kind of psychopathy. I mean, she's just, and yes, I am armchair psychologicalizing. Amy Klobuchar is not somebody that I would want in my close circle. I would feel like she's going to get ready to throw something at me any minute. And I would probably do plenty to provoke her too, by the way. So with all of that aside, we can turn our attentions to Joe Biden. So Joe Biden had, first of all, Joe Biden, if you listen to the media narrative right now, everyone is saying, oh, he did great. I was, and we were surprised at how well he did last night and so on and so forth. Because the expectations for Joe Biden's performances in public have been lowered to the point where if Joe Biden just shows up and doesn't bust an eyeball, people are going to be like, yes, he did good. He did good, Biden. Biden was good. And, you know, to be honest, Joe Biden went a little batshit last night. I remember after the last debate, there was a hashtag that started going, why is Bernie yelling? Bernie's yelling at me, because some talking head said that, oh, it was Chris Saliza, tweeted out that that Bernie's always yelling. And which was weird, because Bernie was totally hoarse for that campaign because he had been on so many speaking events. And there's an amazing moment where Joe Biden is attacking Elizabeth Warren and berating her, just and totally yelling, totally berating her. Let's see if I can find the right clip of this right here. So there's her talking. Let's see. This should be interesting. Is this it?
I went on the floor and got you votes. I got votes for that bill. I convinced people to vote for it. So let's get those things straight, too.
So this is where Joe Biden is making, he's trying to make the case that he's the guy. He's the guy who can get big things done. This is what he had just said prior.
I'm going to say something that is probably going to offend some people here, but I'm the only one in the state who's gotten anything really big done.
I'm the only person who's done big things. That's who I am. All of you other guys are just little, I don't even know what you're doing. Are you making cooking shows or whatever? You know, it's so grotesque, you know, and to follow that up with, you know, play it again. This is Joe Biden turning towards and getting in her space, totally getting in Elizabeth Warren's space. Here we go again.
I went on the floor and got you votes. I got votes for that bill. I convinced people to vote for it. So let's get those things straight, too.
And what they're talking about here is the establishment of the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And it just so happens that Elizabeth Warren wrote a book on the CFPB and you know, what it took to get that started. And if Joe Biden or somebody on his staff had had the good sense to read the book and know what Elizabeth Warren said in it, then they would know that Elizabeth Warren thanks Obama and she doesn't thank Biden. And there is a new window there that Biden is a senator, the former senator from MBNA, you know, Mr. Credit Cards himself, that he might have been, you know, trying to slow walk it or make sure that it didn't happen. So listen here to Elizabeth Warren responding to that.
I am deeply grateful to President Obama, who fought so hard to make sure that agency was passed into law. And I am deeply grateful to every single person who fought for it and who helped pass it into law. But understand.
You did a hell of a job of your job.
Thank you.
That moment right there is so maddening to me. And y'all know that Elizabeth Warren isn't my candidate, but the way that Biden speaks to Elizabeth Warren and the way that he just condescended to her, with like, and you did a very good job. And she pauses and you can see this pain on her face. She pauses and she says, thank you. And it's the voice, it's the response that so many women, like myself, and so many women who've been in boardrooms and been in corporate America, we have dealt with guys like this over and over and over again. You know, whether they're brokers or doctors or whatever position of authority, that kind of shit is the shit that we have to put up with all the time. And, to see him first get in her face and get in her personal space and say, I got that bill done for you. You couldn't have done it without me. When she's already told the history of getting the CFPB established and that, in fact, it seems like Biden, which would be true to his interests as we know them, that he might not have had that much to do with it. Now, at this part in the debate, there's an interesting, it's an interesting menage a trois, y'all, because it's really Bernie, Biden, and Warren. They've turned to, this is near the end of the debate, and they've turned to the top tier candidates, top three candidates, and they're showing in the camera shot those three candidates. And the intent, so you can tell, you can read through and you can tell that what they're doing is they're putting these three candidates together because they want these three candidates to, well, to get into a fight, basically, but to be bouncing off of each other. So here's where all this gets set up. We're going to play this one more time.
I'm going to say something that is probably going to offend some people here, but I'm the only one in the stage who's gotten anything really big done.
I'm the only one here who's gotten anything really big done. Now, that is Joe Biden's main competitive advantage as he sees it. That is what he wants to sell in order to become president of the United States and to win this election in 2020. That is it. That he's done big things. He's sat in big chairs. He's been in big offices. He's done the big things. He's been in big planes and blah, 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 blah. Bernie's moment of the night followed that. And I'm going to play that right now.
You know what you also got done? And I say this as a good friend. You got the disastrous war in Iraq done. You got a bankruptcy bill, which is hurting middle-class families all over this country. You got trade agreements like NAFTA and PNCR with China done, which have cost us 4 million jobs. And let's get to Medicare for all. Let's be honest. We spend twice as much per person as do the people of any other major country on earth.
Bernie Sanders, man. Oh, my God. Now, that is that clip right there. So, like, I think Bernie Sanders had an amazing night last night. I think the night was about Elizabeth Warren. But I think that Bernie Sanders came out of this with an amazing night. And part of the reason why is because of this clip right here. Joe Biden lays down his central thesis. This is why I should be elected, because I've done big things. And listen again. This is what Bernie Sanders does. Oh, and by the way, he does it first by saying, my good friend. You know, he keeps the decorum. He stays within decorum. And then he states the facts.
You know what you also got done? And I say this as a good friend. You got the disastrous war in Iraq done. You got a bankruptcy bill, which is hurting middle-class families all over this country. You got trade agreements like NAFTA and PNCR with China done, which have cost us 4 million jobs. And let's get to Medicare for all. Let's be honest. We spend twice as much per person as do the people of any other major country on earth.
And of course, what followed that was Biden saying that, well, we could do everything you want to do with Medicare for All and it not be Medicare for All because it would be Obamacare or something. You know, it was just totally lame and it didn't land. What everything that Bernie said right there landed. And, you know, I think it was a little unfortunate because once he laid down the central refuting Biden's central advantage in the race, I mean, like he roundly rebutted it. Then he very quickly starts talking about Medicare for All and how that needs to be done. So he attaches the vision to the critique of what has come. And of course, Joe Biden just comes back and is all like, we can do Obamacare again and it'll be just fine. Gosh, I'm actually looking at this clip on my iPad, and it actually does look like Biden's eye was giving him trouble again last night. That's interesting. I did notice that as I was watching the debate last night, or rewatching pieces today. But yeah, it looks like he's having trouble with his eye again. So Bernie Sanders, and all of this is at the end of the debate. So here's Bernie Sanders really bringing it home. You know, this is where, you know, he could be saying, you know, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, you know, and just be like, done. And this is great. You know, it wasn't necessarily a takedown. And this is what I think is wrong with what Klobuchar and Buttigieg are trying to do. They're trying to get in a sick burn. They're trying to do a zinger or, you know, take somebody down. And, you know, that's kind of not the way debates really work. It's a very special thing when you can, you know, land on a zinger, and it's usually something that just comes to mind. It doesn't really work when it's canned. What he did instead of going for the sick burn was he just went for a basic refutation. Just go for the central thesis, refute it, and move on. And he did it beautifully, and he did it with poise and composure. And you know, I felt like that moment made me feel really good, like in the moment, like actually watching the whole thing. That moment, I stopped, picked up my iPad, and I was like, I got to record this one little clip so I can share it on Twitter, you know, because it was immediate to me. It was immediate that this was a winner, and this was a really, really good moment for Bernie. Now, Ryan Grimm had said earlier before the debate, he said that we're seeing Bernie now with those stents in place. So prior to this debate, Bernie has been operating with one of his arteries completely blocked. We're seeing full power Bernie for the first time. And Ryan Grimm's point was that if we had seen full power Bernie in all the debates and all of the events leading up to this, we might even be in a different race, because full power Bernie is a whole new ballgame. Full power Bernie, you know, really bringing it, and at the same time bringing these endorsements, these are game changers. And so one of the things that is looked for in debates is, was there a game changer? And I think that we saw two game changers. Number one, we saw all of these attacks on Elizabeth Warren and not one of them land. Okay. One of the things that I've been very concerned about with Elizabeth Warren is that I don't know if she can go up against Donald Trump and hold her own, but wow, she really held her own against, you know, a barrage of attacks last night. It was stunning. And of course, a lot of that is attributed to the weakness of what people were bringing to bear on her. But, you know, Donald Trump's not the smartest cookie either. So, you know, he could be bringing some pretty weak sauce too. He's just going to bring it in a way that is, you know, it breaks with decorum so much that that you have to, you know, think on your feet and respond to it. We saw Elizabeth Warren thinking on her feet and responding to things in a way that really surprised me. She looked a lot better than I expected she would look, you know, under attack. Then secondly, we've got Bernie Sanders coming back, full power Bernie, you know, not quite bionic. A lot of people are kind of like making fun of me, like, you know, this is bionic Bernie. But, you know, really, it's just, you know, it's kind of like when you get nearsighted all of a sudden, which will happen, you know, at some time in your life, you know, to some people, and you don't realize that you've lost some visual acuity, and then you get your eyes checked and you get new lenses or whatever, and all of a sudden you can really see, and you didn't realize that you hadn't been seeing the outlines of leaves on the tree, or you hadn't been seeing the pattern in carpet or whatever, and all of a sudden you can, and you're like, wow, I was really blind. Well, that's how he's feeling right now, only with energy and with vitality. Getting a stent in place where you've had a lot of blockage, that has got to feel like you've got a new power plant installed. So, you know, we saw that. We saw the endorsements. We saw the horrible reactions to the endorsements. This was a big win for Bernie, and it was a big win for Warren. I think that that the night in general, like, those two candidates could leave the stage and feel really, really good about what happened. I think that everybody else, I think before the next debate, we need to see some people drop out. We need to see, I think, Amy Klobuchar needs to exit stage left. We need to maybe see, you know, Castro didn't have very many good moments. Beto hasn't had good moments. We need to see some of these lower tier people just, you know, end it and find something else to do. You know, like, there's some talent there, but it's not presidential talent, and it's not the kind of talent that's going to win against Donald Trump. Lastly, I want to say, I'm looking at my notes. Yes, I think this is lastly. How do you win an election? Bernie Sanders did this amazing, I wonder if I can find it, because I didn't plan on playing this. Bernie Sanders did this amazing piece where he talked about how you win an election. And I think this is it right here. Yeah, this is it.
The way you win an election in this time in history is not the same old, same old. You have to inspire people. You have to excite people. You got to bring working people and young people and poor people into the political process, because they know you stand for them, not corporate America.
I got to turn this back down. Okay, so I had to turn the gain up on that a little bit. That was the clip that I shared on Twitter on Bernie really expounding on what it takes to win. This is a question that political people are asking. Who is putting forth the argument for how they're going to win the race? Joe Biden is saying, well, I've done big things, so I can do big things. Bernie is saying, you've got to inspire people. You've got to bring people into the process. And largely, that's what Elizabeth Warren is doing as well. So as we move on, I think that this is going to continue being more of a race between Warren and Sanders. And that's going to make things interesting, because I have a feeling that between Warren and Sanders, I think there might be some thoughts in the background that, you know, maybe they work together. It's just a feeling. It's just an intuition. But listen, guys, thank you so much for joining me. It's almost 7 o'clock. I'm going to give you some music to go out to, and I will talk to you again on Sunday. And Wow. Just thank you so much for joining me. This is just awesome. And, you know, I wish I was cool enough to deserve your attention. But here we go.